Coming up next on Passion Struck. Have you ever caught yourself doing something you promised yourself you wouldn't do again? Maybe it's losing your patience with someone you love. Maybe it's reaching for your phone when you've told yourself you wanted to be more present. Maybe it's saying yes when you knew you needed to say no. What's strange isn't that we do these things. It's that while we're doing them, another part of us already knows where it's going. We can almost hear ourselves thinking, "Here I go again." I've been thinking about that all week, because if we already know the pattern, if we genuinely want to change, why do we keep repeating it? For a long time, I thought the answer was discipline. I thought if I wanted it badly enough, I'd simply make better choices. But after two conversations this week, I realized something that completely changed how I think about personal transformation. Maybe real change isn't about trying harder. Maybe it's about understanding what part of us is still trying to keep us safe. Welcome to Passion Struck. I'm your host, John Miles. This is the show where we explore the art of human flourishing and what it truly means to live like it matters. Each week, I sit down with changemakers, creators, scientists, and everyday heroes to decode the human experience and uncover the tools that help us lead with meaning, heal what hurts, and pursue the fullest expression of who we're capable of becoming. Whether you're designing your future, developing as a leader, or seeking deeper alignment in your life, this show is your invitation to grow with purpose and act with intention. Because the secret to a life of deep purpose, connection, and impact is choosing to live like you matter. Hi, friends. Welcome back to Passion Struck, episode 792. Last week, we began a new series on flourishing by exploring what it actually means to become fully alive. After spending June examining the connection crisis, why so many of us feel disconnected from one another, our communities, and even ourselves, July asks a different question. What does it actually mean to flourish? My first solo episode last week centered on a simple but demanding truth. Flourishing begins with presence. So rather than offering a framework or another checklist, I explored that idea through three questions. First, what are you waiting to begin that has already begun? Second, if nobody applauded this life, would you still choose it? And third, was I a safe place to come home to today? All three of those questions stayed with me long after I finished that episode. But they also left me with another question, one that I suspect every one of us has wrestled with. If I genuinely want to change, why do I keep becoming the same person? That's the question we're going to explore today. But before we do, I want to take just a moment to welcome everyone who's joining us. Whether you've been listening to us for years, or this is your very first episode of Passion Struck, if these conversations are helping you see your life through a different lens, I'd love for you to continue this journey with us. Follow Passion Struck on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you don't miss the rest of our flourishing series. If you're someone who enjoys watching these conversations unfold, every episode is available on the Passion Struck YouTube channel, where I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments. And if you want to take these ideas beyond the podcast, I invite you to join me on The Ignited Life, my Substack, where each week I share companion essays, practical reflections, and exercises designed to help you apply these ideas in your own life. It's become a place where this community continues the conversation long after the microphones are turned off. You'll find links to all of those in today's show notes. Now, let's come back to the question that has been sitting with me all week. If we genuinely want to change, why do we keep becoming the same person? After sitting down with Nick Ortner, who's the author of Rewired, and John Gordon, who's the author of The Power of Positive Habits, I realized that they were both answering that question from completely different directions. Nick was exploring how the brain and nervous system shape our behavior. John was exploring how our daily habits quietly shape our identity. Different conversations, different language, but they kept arriving at the same truth. We don't simply live from our intentions. We live from the patterns our minds and bodies have learned to trust. And if that's true, then maybe flourishing isn't about becoming someone completely new. Maybe it's about gently teaching ourselves that a healthier way of living is finally safe enough to repeat. Let's explore why real change feels so difficult and why understanding that may be the beginning of lasting transformation. Thank you for choosing Passion Struck and choosing me to be your host and guide on your journey to creating an intentional life that matters. Now, let that journey begin. I've spent most of my life believing something that, on the surface, sounds completely reasonable. If you want something bad enough, you'll change. It's the belief that carried me through the Naval Academy. It's the belief that carried me through the Navy. It carried me into executive leadership. And honestly, it carried me through starting this podcast. I just thought, work harder, become more disciplined, stay committed, keep pushing. Eventually, the results are going to follow. And for a long time, that philosophy served me well. Until, unfortunately, it didn't. Because there were parts of my life where effort wasn't the problem. I knew exactly what needed to change. I knew when I was saying yes too often. I knew when stress was becoming my default operating system. I knew when I was measuring my worth by productivity instead of presence. Awareness wasn't missing. Desire wasn't missing. Even discipline wasn't missing. And yet, I kept finding myself pulled back toward the same way of living. Not because I wanted to, because it felt strangely normal. I don't know if you've ever experienced that. You finally decide you're going to protect your evenings. And then, wham, an email comes in. 5 minutes later, you're back at your laptop. You promise yourself, like I did, John, stop checking your phone before bed. Then one notification appears. Almost without thinking, your hand reaches for it. Or maybe it's something much deeper. A relationship you know isn't healthy. A conversation you've avoided for months. A story you've been telling yourself since childhood about who you are and what you're capable of. You know darn well it isn't helping you anymore. But somehow, it still feels easier to stay with what you know than step toward what you don't. For years, I interpreted those moments as personal failures. I thought they exposed a lack of discipline, a lack of commitment, maybe even a lack of character, if I'm honest. Then I sat down this week with Nick Ortner, and somewhere in that conversation, he said something so simple that I honestly almost missed it. He told me, the brain doesn't wake up every morning asking, how can I help John flourish today? It asks something much older. How do I keep John safe? At first, I nodded. Of course, that's basic neuroscience. Our brains evolved for survival. Nothing surprising there. But then he kept going, and that's where everything shifted for me. He explained that the nervous system often has a very different definition of safety than we do. It doesn't necessarily choose what's healthiest, or what's wisest, or even what makes us happiest. It chooses what it recognizes, because what it recognizes has already been survived. And suddenly, I wasn't thinking about neuroscience anymore. I was thinking about my own life. I sat there in the studio, listening to Nick describe how the nervous system defaults to familiar, and I started tracing my own history. I thought about my final years in corporate leadership. On paper, everything looked exceptional. I was delivering results, managing massive operations, and moving at a relentless velocity. But internally, my baseline was a state of constant low-grade hypervigilance. My mind was running an automatic script built entirely on hypercriticism and impossible performance metrics. I knew it was hollow. I knew it was wearing me down. And yet, every single time I tried to slow down, every time I tried to step off the treadmill and choose presence over productivity, this overwhelming wave of internal anxiety would kick in. I used to think that anxiety meant I was doing something wrong. I thought it was proof that I lacked the discipline to rest. But sitting there this week with Nick, I finally understood what was actually happening. My nervous system wasn't resisting happiness. It was protecting familiarity. For decades, my brain had associated constant motion, stress, and achievement with survival. Chaos was what I knew. High pressure was what I had successfully navigated. So when I tried to introduce peace or stillness or boundaries, my brain didn't perceive them as rewards. It perceived them as threats. It looked at a healthier, slower pace of living and quietly said, "We've never lived this way before. We don't know the rules here. Let's go back to what has always kept us alive." That realization stayed with me long after that interview with Nick ended, because once I saw it, I couldn't stop seeing it. I started thinking about conversations I've had with friends who were trying to leave careers they had outgrown, people rebuilding after divorce, entrepreneurs stepping away from businesses that had become their identities, parents learning to live in an empty nest. Every one of them described something similar. Not certainty, not confidence, discomfort. That strange feeling that the old life no longer fit. But the new life didn't feel like home yet. And I began to wonder if we've been interpreting that feeling all wrong. What if discomfort isn't evidence that you're making a mistake? What if it's evidence that you're leaving familiar territory? That changed something for me because I'd spent years waiting to feel completely ready before making a change. I was waiting for confidence, waiting for certainty, waiting for the green light that would tell me it was finally safe. But the nervous system doesn't work that way. Confidence isn't usually what comes first. Experience does. You don't become comfortable and then change. You change, and eventually your nervous system learns that the new way of living is safe. That's when something else clicked. It's if the brain naturally pulls us back toward familiar patterns, how do we teach it to trust a different future? That was the question I couldn't stop thinking about when I sat down with John Gordon yesterday. John looked at me and said something that almost seemed too simple. Extraordinary lives aren't built through extraordinary days. They're built through ordinary repetitions. At first, I heard that as a statement about habits. We've all heard some version of that before. Small things matter. Consistency compounds. Tiny actions create extraordinary outcomes. But after my conversation with Nick, I realized John was pointing to something much deeper. He was describing not habits, but how trust is built. Think about what happens every time you make a choice that's different from your default. You close the laptop instead of answering one more email. You go for the walk instead of telling yourself you'll do it tomorrow. You pause before reacting. You apologize instead of defending yourself. You keep a promise to yourself that no one else knows you made. Those moments rarely feel significant. Most of them don't feel transformational. In fact, they often feel disappointingly ordinary. But your nervous system notices every single one of them. Every repetition becomes another piece of evidence. Not evidence that you're becoming more disciplined. Evidence that this new way of living is survivable. Your brain begins collecting experiences. We set a boundary. Nothing fell apart. We rested. The world kept turning. We spoke honestly. We were still accepted. Over time, those experiences began accumulating. The unfamiliar starts losing its edge. The anxiety began softening. What once felt risky starts feeling possible. And eventually, almost without noticing it, it starts feeling normal. That's what I had missed for so many years. I thought change happened because of one courageous decision, one bold leap, one defining moment. John helped me see that lasting change is usually much quieter than that. It's built through hundreds of ordinary repetitions that slowly teach your nervous system a new definition of safety. When I stepped back and looked at both conversations together, everything finally clicked. Neither of them was really talking about productivity or trying to help us squeeze more performance out of our lives. They were describing two different halves of the exact same transformation, one from the inside out and the other from the outside in. Nick helped me understand why meaningful change feels so uncomfortable. John helped me understand why that discomfort doesn't last forever. The future doesn't become familiar because we suddenly feel confident enough to live it. It becomes familiar because we keep returning to it again and again until one day we realize we're no longer forcing ourselves to become someone different. We're simply living in a way that finally feels like us. And somewhere between those two conversations, I realized that this is what it actually means to flourish. Flourishing isn't about forcing yourself to become someone else. It's finally becoming familiar with the person you've always been capable of becoming. Maybe the invitation this week isn't to reinvent your life. Maybe it's simply to notice the places where your nervous system keeps pulling you back towards what feels familiar, even when familiar is no longer where you want to live. Maybe real change begins with one ordinary repetition, one conversation you've been avoiding, one boundary you've been postponing, one walk instead of one more email, one evening where you choose rest instead of proving yourself through productivity, one moment where you respond with curiosity instead of defensiveness. None of those choices will feel exceptional in the moment. Most of them, let's face it, won't even feel significant. But every single one of them teaches your nervous system something completely new. Every repetition becomes another quiet reminder that this healthier way of living is not something to fear. It's something you can trust. And over time, trust becomes familiarity. Familiarity becomes your default. And one day, you'll look back and realize you didn't force yourself to become a different person. You simply became more at home with the person you're always capable of being. That's how flourishing happens. Not through a sudden massive breakthrough, but through the quiet, ordinary repetitions that slowly reshape the architecture of your life. Thank you for spending this time with me today. If this conversation helped you see your own patterns in a new way, I hope you'll share this episode with someone who might need it right now. These conversations grow because you pass them along, and I'm grateful every time you do. If you're enjoying our Flourishing series, make sure you're following Passion Struck on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you don't miss what's coming next. You can also watch every episode on the Passion Struck YouTube channel, where I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments. And if you'd like to continue this conversation beyond the podcast, join me on the Ignited Life on Substack. Each week, I share companion essays, reflections, and practical exercises to help you apply these ideas in your own life. You'll find links to all of those in today's show notes. Next week, our exploration on flourishing continues with Dr. Dana Suskind, surgeon, researcher, and author of the brand new book, Human Raised. Together, we'll explore how the environments we create at home, in our communities, and in our culture shape the people we become. It's a conversation about raising children, but it's also a conversation about leadership, belonging, human potential, and what it takes to build a world where people can truly flourish.
All of these sort of things that we've optimized ourselves for, now AI can replicate it, not replicate it, can surpass us. But the one thing it can't do is care, truly care. It can simulate care, and that's why people are flocking to AI, but it doesn't stay up at night worried about your child, how your child is doing, the things that we as parents do, you know, just instinctively. And I think that caring, that connection is so critical for this next moment in time, because it's actually that will give our children the best chance to thrive in the age of AI with these human edge skills.
Until then, remember this. The future isn't built all at once. It's built one ordinary repetition at a time. So keep returning to the life you're trying to create. Eventually, what feels unfamiliar today will become the place you call home. Go out there and live life passion-struck.